6 November work session on the readopted budget for 2013-2014.
Okay, commissioners, good morning.
Good morning.
Before we get started and we give the floor to Bob Stevens, I would just like to make two remarks. One is to thank Bob for creating a more open budget process, more transparent than the process we had previously. And I'd also like to commend him on his efforts to create a more coherent finance team. He reached out to Mark Gassaway and to John Payne, and they willingly accepted his overture. And I think the product that you see today is, for the first time, a product of a finance team, and we have consensus on what we're presenting today. And I think that's very important. With that, Bob.
Good morning, commissioners. We're here to talk about the 2013-14 mid-biennium readoption as required by RCW. First, I'm going to give you a quick supplemental budget overview, and I'll say right up front I've included material in here and a level of explanation that is based upon the fact that I know this will be going out on the grid, and I want citizens to be able to understand what's in here without any confusion as to accounting terms versus real terms. I will briefly address the requested budget, which I gave you several weeks ago, which we would also refer to as the all submit everything we've been asked for. And then I will go straight into the recommended budget. As Mark said, for the first time, this is a County Administrator Budget Office Finance Team recommended budget that we're bringing to you. When we're finished with the budget, we'll discuss your 2014 levy options. You have a few new ones because of both legislative changes and the fact that we've been banking capacity. Then the finance team will finally present our fund balance policy and ask that you consider adopting that today as we go forward. And then we will open the floor to elected official testimony. Sheriff Lucas, Prosecuting Attorney Golick, and Judges Osler and Higginson specifically asked to testify, so they'll be going first, and then the floor will be open to the remaining offices in alphabetical order should they choose to testify. The mid-biennium review and readoption is required under RCW for jurisdictions choosing to do biennial budgets. Unlike other supplemental budgets, the readoption allows you to actually review and modify the adopted budget. Basically, the rule for supplemental budgets is they are supposed to be limited to necessary items related to new federal, state, or local money. The current situation in the general fund, however, requires that we apply that necessary criteria at this time. So the review of the budget will be based upon what we absolutely have to do. Quick reminder, the board has directed the finance team and to follow these three principles: to maintain maximum financial flexibility, preserve current service levels, and follow the current plan for improving the fund balance in the general fund. I'm happy to report that this budget will follow those criteria. First of all, I'd like to start out with a quick discussion of assigned versus unassigned fund balance, because it's going to be important to understanding the variance between some big numbers in what you're going to see. Assigned fund balance is fund balance that is earmarked within say the general fund for a specific purpose, and it is not considered when we're talking about our reserves. Unassigned fund balance represents those reserves that are available for any legal appropriation by the board. When we say 44 days, we're talking about unassigned fund balance. When we make changes in assigned fund balance, it has an accounting impact without necessarily having a budget impact, because those funds have been set aside prior. So when you compare the reports, or when somebody from the general public comparing the report, the reports that you see in the staff report will report a change in the general fund balance of $4.4 million. That is an accounting change. It is the result of three packages that are in there that affect assigned fund balance. The first being the $2.55 million revenue piece that was put in for the sheriff's custody management system came from assigned fund balance. However, a revenue was posted in the adopted budget, and we're eliminating that revenue. It's not real. The second package for $1.4 million represents simply moving the dedicated Camp Bonneville timber money out of the general fund and into its own fund. And then finally, there are several line items in package number 12 that correct errors of prior budgets. In other words, the offsetting entry was in the omnibus, and now we're actually fixing that at this time. So the actual change in unassigned fund balance is $116,103. And that again is important to make what we're about to say jive with the published reports.
And Bob, the parentheses mean the balance goes down?
The parentheses is bad. Yes, it means we're spending money.
The requested general fund budget, as requested, would have resulted in the use of $4.7 million of unassigned available fund balance. This would deplete the available resources from our current 44-day projected back to 33, and basically have undone everything that we've accomplished so far in 2013 in getting from 33 to 44. This is simply the, I provided you, I think 2 weeks ago, with the requested budget, and I wanted to refamiliarize you with the list that you saw. We'll change that list quite considerably here in the recommended section. On to the recommended budget. The change in major funds is a result of the recommended budget. I'll stick to the actual change column. You'll see that all funds will improve by $11 million as a result of this readoption. The major funds, general fund, will actually have a reduction of 116. The building fund, a reduction of 820. Road fund will show $8.2 million in improvement. Clean water fund will actually show $356,000 in improvement. The difference between the road fund and the clean water fund's accounting change and real change is a placeholder transfer that we've put in place in case we have to make an adjustment related to the transfer that has already occurred between those two funds. Probably will not need to be utilized.
Bob, yeah. What you have in parentheses is a negative?
Right.
So a parentheses would be a use of fund balance or spending. A positive number adds to fund balance.
So the total change, as I said, all other funds, which includes our capital funds, TIPS, the whole shooting match, combined are improving their position by $4.3 million for a net change of 11.9. The general fund recommended budget. There's some major changes to the original list that you saw. They're highlighted here in yellow. At first, the railroad packages were presented as unfunded packages. This piece here, we're showing you the administrative required and contractual requests in the past, that's been given the nickname must-haves, because we really don't have any choice. Some of them represent things we've already done and we're now making the accounting change for, others are contractual. What has changed since the last list of must-haves you've seen is I've had to add the railroad packages to the must-haves. We have a lease that requires us to maintain the railroad in operating condition, and we are committed, because of millions of dollars of state grants that we've taken, to also continue the railroad in operating condition. So those expenses have been moved up. What is new to offset those expenses, I have filed the budget office's workforce planning plan,
and I'm eliminating from the budget the two positions that the board has already seen in the staff report, and that's the budget director's position and the deputy county administrator position. So the net effect on our must-haves is we are using $40,000 between new revenues, new expenses. We're going to use $40,000 for the fund balance. At the bottom, you see unfunded requests, and I'm happy to report a very recent, as of this morning, change in our unfunded requests. And that is through the diligent work Nikki Peterson and Adriana and the prosecuting attorney's office, we have found the resources to fund the DPA position within the existing budget. So the 116 will actually change to 40,033. Is the total net effect.
It's on the next page.
And then there are, of course, a list of what we call budget neutral packages. These are packages which come with their own money. This would be, in any normal supplemental, the new money that RCW refers to in most cases. And you have packages that are budget neutral by virtue of cuts. Versus new money, all of which have the total is $821,000 of added new expense budget, but that will come with $821,000 of added new revenue budget. Okay. And that is the general fund recommended budget. There's been virtually no change in the non-general fund. From the requested to recommended. The finance team has found no fiscal landmines in other funds, so that one has come through largely as originally requested. And this includes the public works requests that will result in the fund balance improvements that you saw, but it also includes increased budget for PIFs and quite a few other public works funds. So this is the recommended budget, the recommended packages. And if you have any questions on that before we move on.
Questions about the recommended? I have a few. So on the non-general fund request, we have a lot on the public works administration. There's a lot of line items within that. When we get to hearing, we're going to be having a work session. Is it the third? We're having a work session on kind of how we're moving forward with parks. A lot of the line items are transfers related to funding that used to go somewhere else and will be used for parks, right?
We haven't gotten to that point yet. They're still working out how the transition is going to occur. The PIF packages you see up here, I believe, are strictly increases in revenues that have occurred.
So there's none of the line items. I mean, there's ad staff for Luke Jensen. There's ad budget for project positions. There's all kinds of stuff in here. None of that's related to the transition of parks?
You're formally adding three positions,
right,
in this budget, but no new budget for them. That budget already exists in Department of
Public Works. Understood. I mean, I know that it's not adding
correct
budget to it, I guess, but it's a whole bunch of line items of things of the transfer. From maybe you're thinking of it straight up in a budget capacity, I'm looking at it as in the whole package of what we're doing, kind of wrapping this information into our work session as well.
Okay.
Just so that everybody has a clear understanding of, like, this is how much, you know, this is where the money is coming from and going to, and this is what we're using it for, and this is how we're going to make sure we keep service the way it's, you know, that we said it's going to. And, I mean, it just all puts it together a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, it's just line items. I have a few questions about the budget neutral requests, especially with DES. And so I don't know if Don, yeah, come on. I just have a few questions because there are reductions in programs, and they're budget neutral from the standpoint of they look like they're coming from, you know, clean water program or from solid waste. But I got a little confused as I started looking through, Draw and Green program, that's a clean water program expense, so I get it as far as, okay, it's a clean water program, a clean water fund savings that will be then, you know, put into other programmatic work. The administration revenue and expense reduction was straightforward for me. Plume Creek was straightforward. That was the acquisition that we're getting, you know, the money that we're getting for acquisition for Plume Creek. The Watershed Stewards Program funding, we've talked about it before, but I didn't understand. There's three lines on it. There's General Fund, Solid Waste Fund, Clean Water Fund, and they're all the same dollar amount. I didn't understand it. I'm just trying to figure out, well, where's the money coming from? Where is it going to be? Where's it being saved from? Where's it going? And I just didn't understand the line items on that one.
The reason it shows that is because the management of the program is from the sustainability department, and so money flows in to sustainability and outreach from clean water.
Okay.
It is then expended out of the sustainability and outreach budget. So it comes in, they bill clean water, and so that's why it shows three different line items. Have I got that right, Tom?
That's right.
Okay.
Okay. So it's coming in from clean water, and then it gets spent up.
Got it. Okay. That's why it shows in three different line items. Like,
got it. And is that the same as with the Master Gardener? Because the Master Gardener program is being reduced by 16. So is
no,
that?
Because Master Gardener isn't paid for with clean water funds.
Okay.
That's paid for out of the sustainability and solid waste fund.
And isn't that part of the, I mean, we do that work as part of the DES grant that we, I mean, we have a huge, not DES, DOE. We have
Department
huge,
of Ecology.
Yeah, we have a big ecology grant that has a bunch of activities that we already said for 2014, we already did a grant application. I mean, is this changing the programmatic work that's being done?
No, the grant application was for 2013 funds.
We don't have a 2014 grant application with DOE?
We will. We have many. We have hundreds of grant applications. Mm-hmm. And we will. But it won't affect that program. That grant was already given. That money will be used this year. This is going forward into 2014. And what we're doing is we're trying to trim a little bit here and there and save some of these programs so that the cumulative effect is that we can protect that solid waste budget so that we don't get in the same situation long term with that budget that we're actually in today with the clean water budget.
I guess
so we're just thinking
that makes sense. Usually, so like for in public works, if we are going to change our capital budget, our transportation budget, what we're going to do the next year, we always have a work session on that. So having line items, budget neutral line items within a readopt that actually are implementing program changes, to me is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because it feels like it's getting kind of buried in the line item as opposed to us having a conversation about what the programs are,
right.
And then you get sign off on it, and then we're all on the same page moving forward with it. So I get why these are in here. I'd love to see us actually have a little bit, you know, a little bit of a conversation, a work session about what are the programmatic changes that are being suggested, just as we do with every other, whether it be community development or with public works. Whenever there are program changes and shifts, we talk about it, you know. And so I'd love to see that conversation happen.
Commissioner, I understand completely your request and happy to do that. This
great.
Is a de minimis change. It's a very minor adjustment, $16,000. We looked at all three of these programs,
right.
And all three of them actually were up for elimination. We were able to save two of them, and with some very small reductions in those two. And we're able to bring the watershed one in-house, and we'll manage that with existing funds.
I think that's a good message. I think that we need to share that message, because if we don't share it, then people get concerned. And then, you know, we had someone come in and testifying yesterday because they see a line item in a budget, and all of a sudden, you know, it gets spun out a little bit. So I'd love to have better. And that's the last one, and this is one that does need to have.
Speaking of that, I'm happy to respond.
Oh,
to
yeah.
That issue.
Well, because ultimately, the last one is the item number 26, the Sustainable Forestry Program. We have done forestry activities in Camp Bonneville, but we had two work sessions before we agreed upon even doing sustainable forestry activities in Camp Bonneville, and full discussion in the public, and we had a $50,000 budget to start it, not $150,000. So I'm very concerned that we are engaging in a forestry program as a line item in a budget that we're just kind of signing off on it without having any discussion of where, when, how much, because, I mean, when Mark raised, he said Green Mountain was one potential area that it might be. I immediately went to, yeah, I know a bunch of the people that live around Green Mountain. They are all going to freak out if they all of a sudden get a notice that we just signed off on this in a budget without any sort of conversation. So that concerns me greatly.
I think
you have a specific question, because I'm happy to tell you why that's in there and what we're doing with it.
Yeah. I think we've gotten to where we are. Is the request that we keep bumping up against, and that's the push to increase the stormwater fees because we don't have enough money. And that's what we've gone back through the whole department and looked at the different things that we were funding with that clean water funds were driving that fund down. This one up here on number 22, well, basically we were paying WSU to run a program. We probably should have been running that program within.
I get it. I mean, on any of those, it's just a matter of it's a quick conversation so that everybody kind of understands it. But the one that concerns me the most that I think we need to have the real conversation about, because literally we had two work sessions before we ever even started logging activities in Camp Bonneville, is the sustainable forestry program, because which county lands are you going to do it on and how? And it's $150,000 worth of budget capacity with the promise that it will be paid back by logging revenues. But we don't have those revenues yet. Or are we going to use Camp Bonneville? There's just so many questions associated with that. That's a work session. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, is that that is a policy issue, not a budget issue. So my request would be that we actually have the policy discussion before we give the budget authority.
What are your balance of budget?
No, this isn't a balancing the budget. They're asking for $150,000 of budget authority that they pay back with logging revenues. It's not clean water funding stuff. So
let me address that.
Yeah, go for it.
It's simply a placeholder, Commissioner, in the budget. We had anticipated operations on potentially Green Mountain, and now we have another piece of property that we hope to soon have a deed from DNR on called Spud Mountain. In the 2015-2016, but it looks like there's the potential of being able to expedite that into the 2014 year. So we've asked for a budget placeholder for $150,000. The difference between that and Camp Bonneville is Camp Bonneville has significant road infrastructure in it already.
Agreed.
Green Mountain does not.
No, we'd be road ribbon.
And so this is to provide access if we are able to do that. And let me just say also that you're right about the significant work sessions and so on and so forth. As a result of the Camp Bonneville program, our stewardship plan template for Camp Bonneville, we received dual certification. We're not only certified by the Sustainable Forest Initiative, but we're also certified by the Forest Stewardship Council. And that dual certification is important. And that stewardship plan template has been taught by our forester to other municipalities. The city of Astoria has adopted it, Multnomah County has adopted it, and King County has adopted that. As a result of the training of our forester, we will use that same exact template that has already been dual certified when we begin to adopt the actual plan for doing that. If we go forward and do it, great. If we don't, that's okay too, but we want that placeholder in the budget so that if we do decide to move forward, right, and after a work session with the board that you approve based on our dual certifications from the two most important globally recognized certification programs, then we will have the budget authorization to move forward. There is no intent to move forward until we present the plan. And we don't have the plan yet, but the plan costs money. We can't develop these certifications without any cost. So part of that $150 would be for road building and construction, but the other part of it would be for paying to actually do the plan. And that way then we'll have a plan to present to the board. But we have to have the money to come forward with the plan. Now all these certification plans are based on principles that end up being developed into performance standards, and those principles come from policies that are obtained from the Montreal Protocol and the Copenhagen Protocol, which are part of the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, which has been approved by the Department of Ecology for our operations at Camp Bonneville. We will use that exact template for our Green Mountain operations and potentially for Spud Mountain.
So those
but not without board approval.
Exactly. Those are all policies, and I don't care where Copenhagen is. We set the policy with regards to how county lands are used. It's not a I mean, that my simple point was, it's not a budget line item to put into a readopt to give you authorization to start road ripping in Green Mountain, because that is not a plan, that is construction. And that's, you start ripping a road through Green Mountain, you will get calls. I guarantee you'll start getting calls from people saying, what are you doing? And then we will have approved the budget authority to already start the construction process to get into a forestry stewardship program, which may be a great idea, but if we do it the wrong way, we will guarantee the kind of controversy that I don't think we want.
Well, it's a question of timing. There's really the only controversy that exists right now is the emergency health situation of the Green Mountain Forest. We have that problem with Camp Bonneville as well. Okay.
That's all policy conversation.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, you have to make that case as to why we go in. We've had none of those conversations. Today we're just doing a simple readopt. Should be a simple readopt. With a budget neutral line item that gives authority to start doing construction. I would be comfortable seeing planning activities.
That's not the case.
You said road ripping, right? Going, you have to build roads? That's construction.
This money is potentially for the cost of developing the plan and what we perceive to be the potential cost of putting in roads. We're not going to be putting in any roads.
That's what I'm talking
until
about.
We develop the plan.
The plan is great. I'm good with the plan. It's the and potentially building roads. Because once you start ripping roads through, that's construction. That's actually getting to work. So
we're not doing that without board approval.
That's what I'm trying to get to, is trying to say that before any of those activities can take place, that there needs to be something contained within this that you do not have budget authority to start going in and starting to rip roads until we've given authority and policy sign off on the plan to actually do the work. That is my hope.
Well, there are many items in our budget that we have budget authority for that we will not move forward and spend until we have a plan adopted by the board. This wouldn't be the only one.
That is great.
In planning a budget ahead, we're planning anticipating forward action. If we don't anticipate forward action, then we have to come back and ask for a budget authority once we have a plan adopted. So we think that's getting the cart before the horse. We want the budget authority so that we know that we should even spend any time or effort on developing the plan, the stewardship plan that we come to you with.
I think we're all, I'm certainly in agreement that having the plan, putting the plan together, coming back to the board and having a policy conversation about this is a good thing. Before any roads are ripped, any trees are cut, any activity happens that the board signs off on, you going into county lands and tearing anything up. I mean, we do that with all our other programs.
We fully intend to do
it. No, he said it was the plan and the roads necessary.
And we have to adopt the plan.
Right.
So
the plan is fine, not the roads.
It's a better question, I would say, that is there a criteria of time that we probably should have this work group in sequence with this budget? Because I would like to plan ahead, and that's what the budget does. And if we do this, and this is here, is there time frame that we should have that work session to be effective here?
Sure, we anticipate a work session sometime in March, probably.
So we have until March.
Okay.
But I think it's important that it's here.
And there will be no roads ripped before we have that March work session.
That is correect.
That's
there'll be no roads ripped without
complete
plan being forwarded. You know, coming before the commission with a plan, we'll lay out our plan in great detail.
That is exactly the commitment I'm looking for. I appreciate it.
If you approve it, then we'll go ahead and implement it. If you don't approve it, then we'll have an extra, it'll probably cost us a little bit of money to do the plan, but whatever's left over will be put back into the budget next year.
Perfect. I think involving the public in that, getting them involved up front will help us as we move forward with that, because there's been some great work that's gone on at Camp Bonneville, and we can kind of show that off a little bit.
Well, the Forest Stewardship Council does, and that's one of the neat things about being certified by the Forest Stewardship Council, is that they conduct the outreach efforts on our behalf under certification. And they did that at Camp Bonneville. They did an excellent job. We anticipate that they will do that again on any additional forestry operations.
Perfect. Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it.
All right.
So this is, so we have the recommended budget. No, we have the public works stuff, DES stuff. The rest of it was pretty straightforward, it seemed like. Right. I'm glad to hear, actually I had one other thing, and that was on the, we now have, you said DPA, and I'm sure we'll hear from Tony, from our prosecuting attorney, about where they found, where you guys were able to find funding, but kind of maybe give us a little bit of a preview.
You bet. Well, as part
That's
of the part of the review that Adriana's been doing on all of our general fund subsidies, she went through and looked at the subsidy to the victim witness fund. We upped that subsidy a few years ago when the fund was having some problems with their regular revenue stream. They have since recovered from that, and all of us agree that the fund, at least temporarily, well, barring any future changes in the mutual revenue stream, can yield enough money to fund this position out of that transfer. So it results in no reduction in service to the victim's witness program and adds new service to the general fund.
That's awesome. Very good. Great work, Adrian.
Yes.
All right. Excellent.
So the recommended budget will be amended to show that there are no unfunded packages other than must-haves, and that's what we'll press forward.
Now on to the real fund.
You've always deal with five annual levies, essentially. Two of which, well, there's six on the board because I'm including the Greg Clark's Park District. We'll have to deal with that, although you have to change hats to do it. You have the general fund levy and two subordinate levies, the veterans levy and the mental health and disabilities levy. These are not levies that are on top of the general fund. They are, in fact, diversions of general fund. So they do not add to the tax burden. They simply redirect the general fund's tax burden. And then you have the road fund levy, the conservation futures levy, and then finally the Greater Clark Parks District levy. What has changed in the first three, including the subordinates, is that you have built bank capacity. That has created a different option. And I should point out that the number of options you have are virtually unlimited. We're zeroing in on what you've done historically, what's been the historical things that the board has considered, and focused on those options. I mean, we could have a whole work session literally on your options under the veterans levy at this point under the new legislation, and we may have to get to that at some point. But what you're seeing today is nothing more than, this is what you traditionally considered in considering your levy options, which has been last year's levy, 0 to 1% increase, or you know, no increase to 1% increase. The piece that has changed is your ability to now consider the highest lawful levy as opposed to last year's levy, and that basically is the result of having banked capacity. Now that would show as a tax increase when we actually wrote the resolution. Even though you could add your 1% to it or not add your 1% to it, we would still have to show it in the resolution as whatever an increase it was over the last year levy. But that is the option for levies. There is a sheet in section 6 of your handout that puts some estimated dollar amounts to all of those levies. Typically, levies have to be adopted by November 30th. We have always stretched that and included it in the budget process, which is the first week of December. So we will bring you resolutions that will allow you to choose from among the same options that you've chosen from in the past at the time of the hearing. It's not appropriate for us to discuss your choices now. But obviously we can't bring you an infinite number of resolutions, so we have to zero in on the 15 or 16 that you're going to have to choose from. If the board does want more information, if you do want to go into this more in depth, I would highly recommend we do a joint work session between the budget office and the assessor's office to discuss some of the changes. The most legislative changes have occurred in mental health and veterans, but they are the smallest impact levies that you're dealing with as well. Traditionally, what the board has done is allowed the subordinate levies to follow the path of the governing levy. And that would be that general fund is expected to grow from new construction by about 1%. And therefore, we would increase the subordinate levies by 1% to follow, to reflect that growth. Don't have to, but again, this has been the past practice of the board. So those are the kind of things that we get to consider. For example, in the veterans levy, you truly have an infinite number of choices. You can levy anything from 0.01125 to 27 cents per thousand, which changes the levy from 400,000 a year to 10 million a year. You know, so there is a lot of things there that we've never really considered doing in the past for obvious reasons. We can't afford that. The general fund can't afford that. Yes, Commissioner.
Do we know what the valuation difference is from last year compared to this year? How much that percentage has gone up?
I don't know if we have a final number yet. Almost 10% up, yeah.
So on the sheet that you have in there, you'll see that we're talking about $781,661 of new construction generated property tax.
And that's a one-time bump?
Well, no, that'll be, as long as the assessed value stays up, that'll go on forever. But that's the new construction elevation of the base.
Right, that's what I mean. But that elevation of the base from new construction, that happens when it's new. So that one time, and then it stays elevated.
It would be the same as doing a 1% tax increase and then never doing another one. So it just has that one effect. But it goes on forever.
So I get that question. So basically, the new construction valuation, what percentage that is?
That's going to relate to roughly 1% increase.
Okay. So it's kind of like we don't do anything. If we say zero and we add zero, then we automatically get a 1% increase because we have an extra construction work.
Correct.
And is there, but you were saying it doesn't filter naturally down to the other levies?
No, you have to make separate resolution decisions on those levies.
But the 1% bump from the new construction bump doesn't apply to the other levies? It's just
only if you say so. And those are independent levies in which you have a lot of different choices.
I know, I just thought it had the same structural, I thought it did the same structural things as the general fund. New construction bumped up the overall.
It has done that by policy of the board.
I didn't know, I thought that was natural. That just
no, you have a lot
I
of
I think it's because it's the other two levies, they're really not levying on valuation. They're basically diversions from the general fund.
Correct.
They're expense changes. Really.
Correct. Right? But they are based upon assessed value and at least the veterans levy is based on assessed value and a choice of cents per thousand to create the dollar amount. So it's a pretty complex process to really get through simple steps, but we're trying to focus on what the board has historically, how they have approached the issue of the levy, with only the significant new added elements that you have to consider.
So let me try to put this in terms. So if I'm going and talking to my neighbor, and say I live in unincorporated Clark County, for the sake of argument, and I say, we're not raising your property tax, you know, we're not raising it to 1%. And because of new construction, we have this kind of natural 1% boost. But the policy has been that for these other levies, that they kind of follow the boost from new construction.
Right.
So if that's the case, do their property taxes go up?
No. No, no, they are
three people. Okay.
They are diversions.
Okay.
Of the
that's what I just need to be able to explain it in real terms to real people. So that's the answer. No is a good. That's a good answer.
That's it.
Okay. I like that.
Those three are completely tied together. The final option that you'll have to consider does relate to changing hats and becoming the Greater Park Parks District Board, and that is the fact that the MPD levy has in fact been pro-rationed in the last year. So the standard practice of considering last year's levy, you also have to actually say, no, we want it to go back to the full
amount voted by the voters. I think that it was dropped to 16 cents per thousand as a result of pro-rationing. We have to make a conscious decision to go away from pro-rationing in that resolution.
Explain the pro-rationing a little bit again for me. This is when we hit the cap, isn't it?
This is the 590 cap. When the 590 cap on assessments is hit, there is a hierarchical order of which levies get punished first. And parks levies are at the top, and they do get hit first. The only levy that we have, the county has, that has suffered under prorationing from the last recession was the Metropolitan Parks District or Hurley Park Parks District levy, because it was the most vulnerable to prorationing. So it is a consideration that only exists for that levy, and the board will have to make that. What we will probably do, at least as far as the levy goes, I don't know if we'll have the Greater Clark Parks District budget available for you at the same time. I'm going to try, but at the end of the budget hearing on the 3rd, you'll simply adjourn, reconvene as the Greater Clark Parks District, and then consider that budget and levy at the same time.
So again, kind of in real person terms, will you be asking us to restore it to the level that the voters approved?
Exactly.
Okay. And not more than that?
Not more than that, no.
Okay. So the voters approved the levy, you'd be restoring it to what the voters approved?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, because the voters never decided to reduce the levy. That was a result of the pro-rationing.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
And that concludes the readoption budget levy piece. If I could get Mr. Gassaway up here to join me, we'd like to talk to you a little bit about fund balance policy.
Good. Which tab are we under on that one,
Bob? Tab 7. Number 7.
Seven. Okay.
I'm going to invite
Oh, and John, I'm sorry. I just invited Mark. Mark has taken the lead on this and
he's
at the front of the finance team. So
we really appreciate the finance and budget teams working together on this to be able to really work in lockstep to figure out a fund balance policy that's best for the county. So.
Commissioners, a week or two ago, we had a discussion on proposed fund balance policy for the Clark County General Fund. The fund balance policy that we're proposing is a new methodology. Is that on?
Get closer to Mark.
Yeah, sorry, we'll
Takes a new methodology. We're proposing to use a risk-based methodology in determining the amount of fund balance that is required under the general fund. And without going again into great detail, the point of going to a risk-based fund balance policy is so that we examine the factors within our own area, within our own county, that are important so that we can maintain our operational efficiencies and prepare for and be prepared should we need fund balance for various things. Now, that's different than what we've had in the past. In the past, we've used just a best practices or a general type of a policy. And again, this is much more formalized and much more specific to the county. So I don't know if you have any additional questions on this. You've had a chance to look at it and read it. John, I don't know if you have any questions on it as well.
We're looking at the finance team here. These are the four. Mark, you're included in that, right? And you guys are all in agreement. You're a team. You have no reservations as to what is to be proposed as the recommended budget or the policy, right?
No. Actually, we, as far as the recommended budget, we've had those discussions amongst ourselves, and that's what was proposed. That's what went forward as a finance team, and as well as the fund balance policy has been vetted amongst all of us and several others as well, and that's our recommendation going forward. So,
that's a really healthy sign. Great.
And we've had this conversation, Mark and I had this conversation, the fund balance policy, before it was just 60 days. You know, it was like, well, why 60 days? I don't know. The GF always says it should be 60 days because that's what will help us preserve our bond rating. And you give them a couple of things, but it didn't really tell the story as to why you needed a certain dollar amount. And so the three kind of levels of protection that you guys have talked through are a really good way of illustrating, you know, this is what we need and this is why. I mean, to cover operational costs and the risks that we have, and you know, to really be able to tell the story of it. I'd love to see some representation of that, some visualization of that, that we can then share with people so that they have a better understanding. Because the danger is when you start building your reserves back, people are like, why do you have $15-20 million in the bank? Why do you need my money, man? Go spend that. And if you have too little, then you know, our bond council and everybody gets mad at it. So it's good to be able to tell the story of why we have a certain something we're shooting for. You know?
And I think this specific policy does just that. It explains exactly why we need this certain level of financial protection.
I will say that whoever figured out the 60 days was pretty darn good, considering that you guys figured it's, what, 57? Because I asked, like, well, how many days is this?
Yeah, I think it's 54. But
54?
Yeah. It just depends on what our operating level is. So.
But it's pretty close to 60, so I was like, all right, somebody back in the day probably did all of this evaluation and then said, yeah, I don't know, it's somewhere around 60. But this is a good way of actually showing our work, so it's really good stuff.
Okay. So, good luck.
You going to say something?
No, what we'd like to do is be able to bring this forward then in a, I guess, a consent agenda.
Consent agenda. To have it approved. Report to have it formally approved.
I'm going to want to pull it from consent, and so we can have a discussion about it and actually show it off a little bit as far as what we're doing and why. But consent's fine as long as legally we can do that.
Okay. We'll figure that part out.
Right.
Can you briefly just simply summarize our bond rating and how we are on that scale? Just brief.
The bond rating is AA2 for limited tax general obligations. That's bonds that you can issue on your own vote. And on unlimited tax obligation bonds, that's bonds that the people would vote for. We're AA1. The highest scale is AAA, so on unlimited we're just one scale below AAA. And Moody's is putting forth a new process on rating, and fund balance has been really scaled upwards. And with Standard & Poor's, who we don't have a rating with, they've already published theirs, and 30% of their decision making around your rating evolves around fund balance.
And that fund balance includes your fund balance policy, whether you're following it. Right. You know, it's become a much larger piece of what they're looking at now. So this is good timing for us to have this in place.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I have a question there. When you have one is AA1, one is AA2, how many numericals do you get?
What do you mean? No, there's only three. It's down to AA3. And then you go to single A, 1, 2, 3.
And going the other way.
To go the other way, we only have one route to get to AAA.
Yes.
We're
AA2.
Our median income in the county would have to go up to get to AAA.
Would just be on our control.
Well, is it?
We'll have that in 10 days,
2 weeks.
Have that discussion.
Excellent. Great work, you guys. Thank you very much.
Okay, for this portion, commissioners, I'd like to allow the elected officials to approach and give their testimony. And at the end of elected official testimony, I will ask you a simple question about which budget you want to publish.
Perfect. And it's not even about a lot. We're looking forward to inviting our fellow elected officials up here to share with us, you know, kind of their budget priorities, if there are anything within the readopt they would like us to be considering. So we have the sheriff's office, I think, was the first.
The sheriff was up first. He requested.
We're going to take your recommendation to the last.
Say again, I'm sorry. Hold on.
We're going to take the recommendation to go last so that we can have as much time as possible.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. We told everybody that this is a supplemental budget, not a biennial budget.
We have.
Definition of supplemental budget.
I thought that was a good definition that you had at the front, which, what was it here? Oh, no, you had a, hold on, I highlighted it, because that was really a good way to kind of set the frame for all of this. That this readopt is intended to allow for modifications to the budget beyond those deemed necessary to accommodate new federal, state, or local resources that were not available for consideration in these other
budgets
and new revenue.
Yeah.
So, all right. So with that, then the sheriff is not. Who's
prosecuting attorney Tony Golick? It's
pretty quick, Tony. Yeah. You got the Good morning, Mr. Prosecuting Attorney.
Good morning, Commissioners. Let me just give you each other. Well, I think based on the excellent work of the budget and finance team in cooperation with our office, I could keep this maybe briefer than you would expect it, since it is a budget neutral request. The document that I handed to each of you commissioners is our adult felony filing chart. And if you recall, this time last year, I was making this same request, and I was making this request for this position to be approved here in the re-adopt. So this is that same position that we talked about this time last year. And it was based on this adult felony filing information, and that those filings have gone up. If you recall, in the fall of 2009, the prosecutor's office took reduction in force from budget issues. We lost 17% of our force in the criminal division. It was an appropriate reduction at the time based on felony filings and the downturn in felony filings that had occurred since 2005. But what I was pointing out this time last year is that the felony filings are charging back up. And Commissioner Mielke, if you recall, last year when I was requesting that we put this position in the biennial budget to actually be funded here at the re-adopt, you were saying, well, it's, you were supportive of the idea, but you're saying, well, let's make sure that we keep watching those filing numbers and, you know, report back to you on where those numbers are. And that's the graph that I've shown you that continue to go up. Everybody else doesn't have it, but from 2009 to 10, we were at 2,000 felony filings per year. We're up to 215. Then we've gone up 100 felony filings per year, with projected of 2,333 felony filings by the end of this year. So this is that same position. It is budget neutral, and the reason that budget office and finance team were able to come up with that is the Crime Victims Compensation Fund. We get money from the state when people commit felonies, and they have to pay into Crime Victim Compensation Fund. We get funding for our victim assistance, our victim advocates. That fund had gone down, so there was an adjustment that was approved to fund up that balance out of the general fund, but money has come back in from CDC, so there's an ability to, you know, take that general fund money back out of that fund and use that to make this a budget neutral for this position. I would indicate that there is a very, very significant need for this position. The felony filings have continued to go up, and we have developed a very significant need, particularly in the Children's Justice Center, where Commissioner Mielke, you sit as a board member, I think you're well aware of the need there. So the plan is to put this position in the Children's Justice Center to make sure that we're getting fast action on those cases, which is, I think, absolutely critical. Questions?
And that's in there, right? That is part of the budget, so you're happy with it.
I'm happy with it.
Great.
Excellent. Thanks for explaining that and for following the filings on this and following up with us so that we have a better idea of what the caseload looks like and the need.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for supporting this, Commissioners. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Tom.
The district court has requested also to speak to the board. Judges Osler and Higginson were... so they're next.
Your Honor.
Oh, yeah, we don't have the extra chairs in our budget, so.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. I suppose it would make the most sense to discuss the items that don't look like they're going to be approved at this point. First, item 25 that we have is for the... data information system coordinator, and
Sorry. So, item we don't have it as item 25. What item is it listed under the budget so we can all be?
It's 27.
It's 27? 27. Got it. All right. 27.
Okay. And this is kind of misleading. This really isn't a request for new dollars. It's a request for a transfer. Some time ago, Obis came forward to the commissioners with a suggestion that our IT person fall under their umbrella with the representation that there was an understanding and commitment that we would have a person dedicated to district court and corrections. And over the last few years, that's kind of disappeared. And right now, we're moving forward with our paperless court system and some other things where we desperately need an IT person. At this point, our IT person is essentially our court administrator. And the issues we're having is we need a dedicated person back, and we're just asking the transfer be made from back to the district court correction side. And some of the things that we're experiencing is we have a technical issue with the system. We call for support, and the information we get is, here's a number from Microsoft, call them and they'll tell you how to do it. So we really need a dedicated person in our department. And this support is also going to benefit the clerk's office and Superior Court as they move forward with implementing the paperless court. And so again, this is just a request to transfer that position back to us.
Sorry, so we don't have that number in our books because it wasn't within the recommended budget. Bob's pulling it up just to show
sure,
us.
These would be these four packages here that you requested.
Which was the version I gave you 2 weeks ago, but this is the staff report.
So it's in the draft. It's in the older version?
It should be in the older version, yes.
Right, we have it there. We just don't have it in this book. We don't have it. You know, the original draft we were given, we have it. Okay, this is the information services board.
Right.
Got it. And so Judge, you were saying that this is basically transferring, you know, this, there were funds transferred that were transferred back. This is showing, we show it as a general fund, as a general fund hit. So what's the discrepancy within that?
Well, what happened is the position was originally removed from our budget over to the general fund.
Okay.
And so then what's happened is we're not getting the IT support, so we need a dedicated IT person. So we're just asking transfer that position back to us.
I got you. So
I think the reason you see it as an ad is because they have to acquiesce to give it up.
Right.
So it looks like an ad in what you've seen.
And so it's a transfer, but it looks like an ad because it was taken away, so it would have to be an ad back. Okay.
This transfer occurred quite some time ago, and there's been a lot of changes in IT since then. So it's something that I think IT and District Court need to get together on and perhaps discuss the support problem. But there isn't necessarily still a one-to-one relationship between the position that went away, I think, almost 10 years ago, and something that exists in general or in the IT section now to simply for them to give up.
I think as we go to hearing, what might be helpful is to understand, get the backstory, get like when was the position given up, what was the position that was there, and so that we can see is this a more of one to one, because that long ago, I mean, I don't know if I was even here for that part of it, and so none of us were here, so it'd be good to know like what was. What, and then so we know what is and what's being suggested by you guys. And that might be helpful for us to you know, as we're considering those things. So, go ahead.
Right, I agree. And it would be really good to be able to make sure that there's good communication with the IT staff so that you're all on the same page so that we know how that would work with them.
Yeah, and the issues we have is, you know, we'll have seven, possibly eight courtrooms operating, and all of a sudden we have a problem with the system. And we don't have the ability to make the work request and have somebody come over immediately, where if we have somebody on our staff, they're on it immediately, where we can take care of the issue instead of shutting everything down and waiting until we go through the normal process of asking for IT assistance.
So especially if you go paperless and you need more and more support on the chair.
So the IT staff is over here, so you that person actually is there in your area.
Yeah, like they were before.
Commissioners, if I could, the Departmental Information Systems Coordinator, I think, Pete, you have two of those. I think the sheriff has some internal IT capability. The more complex the IT world becomes in departments, the greater the need for an on-site dedicated staff member for that instantaneous response. Typically, folks call the help desk, email the help desk, and they go in a queue, and then we triage the requests based on importance and loss of capability. A loss of a courtroom system is pretty important. But if you have somebody dispatched elsewhere, then they've got commute time and that sort of thing. So we will work with district court on this. We're going to come to you with a good story during the hearing.
Good.
Well,
you pointed out.
Come on. I don't even want you to come up here. What we have in district court right now are programs that are not generally supported by our IT department. Our IT department, they're really great. But what we have are systems that are unique to the court, unique to the clerk's office, unique to district court. And so we don't necessarily get the kind of support that IT can do.
Well, yeah, so you guys will work together as we're getting ready for hearing, kind of make, you know, give us more of the story of, you know, the position that was transferred and the work that's being done, that needs to be done, and so that we can look at that by the time we get to hearing. Does that make sense?
Yes. Sure.
Is that okay, Morgan?
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, excellent.
Okay, then the second thing we wanted to discuss was the the video conferencing, and that's item 29. And basically, what we have right now is we have a Polycon unit that we don't have support for, and it's basically falling apart. And we use this primarily at this point for communication with prisoners in jail. And so the attorneys use that to communicate with the prisoners. And there were a couple of different units that were operational. I think now we're down to one. And this is something that affects district court, affects the jail, and also superior court. And what we're asking for is basically a technology upgrade with something that is supported, and that's the Mondo pad. And this is something that also we're responsible for interpreter services for the county. And what this does is, instead of having interpreters have to go into the jail or go to different locations, we can have them in a dedicated location where they can provide their services by video. And so this is something where it's actually something that we can leverage into additional costs in other areas. So there's an upfront cost to upgrade, but this will result in a cost savings for a number of different departments as this is implemented.
So, and for this and others, I'd be curious to know, I mean, like we said before, this is a readout, so we're obviously trying to keep things tight with this. I mean, we don't generally take on new expenditures unless they're either desperate, you know, like the bridge is falling down for Flash Prairie Railroad, or we have new money that has come in to help fund a position or the technology. And so the question would be for this and any of these is, why would we need to do it in a readopt versus doing it to the regular biennial budget cycle? And B, what efficiencies or new money could be brought to bear to help pay for a one-time expense, which this is?
Again, we had two units we're working. We're down to one, and we're just limping by on one. And so this is both a Band-Aid approach and also an upgrade that, this thing is garbage, and we're having experiences because of that.
So that's a one-time expense?
Yes.
And how much was that expense?
63,000.
Third thing is mental health court UAs. Department of Community Services used to provide funding for UAs for our mental health court participants, and there's nationwide figures show that as far as folks that have mental issues that are in the community, 90% of those folks have substance abuse issues. And so that's something that we're addressing in our mental health court as part of our therapeutic court program. And, of course, this is what we're trying to do is affect the criminality of these folks. And it's really difficult to hold them responsible and know what we need to do for them without the UAs.
What's the UA?
Urinalysis. And so, again, the UAs are a very effective way to provide the necessary treatments and also how we handle those folks. And again, the funding was cut by community services, and the RSN, the Regional Support Network for mental health folks, does not provide UA funding. And so, pardon?
By law, they cannot.
So that was that component for the mental health UAs, and I believe that's $26,000.
Yes, we have that.
Yeah. Okay. And then the last one, which is the big one for us, is our JABS upgrades. All of our courtrooms use the JABS system, and the JABS system is what is basically our court record. And it's what we do to preserve everything that happens in the court. And it's real critical when we have cases that are appealed that we have a good record. And we've gotten all kinds of information from Superior Court that they are basically making decisions on appeals because there's no record. So they're, in other words, the county or the city is losing the case because there's no record. And they send it back to us to do a redo. And that's something that's expensive and causes a great deal of time and stress on our staff, as well as most of these cases are criminal in nature. So we have folks where their appeal is granted, and they can be out of the system for a period of time until the case is reactivated. And so right now, not all of our courtrooms, they don't all work, and we're all experiencing where we have dockets where we go in and try to fire the thing up and it doesn't work, so we're moving to a different courtroom. And right now we're doing patchwork repairs. We have people on our staff that go in and try to get things running, but we're in real dire straits with this and really need to have a system that works.
And what did JAV say?
Jefferson Audio Visual Systems. It's an acronym for the vendor.
And that would be a one-time cost as well?
Yes.
So how much?
$42,730.
All right.
In a nutshell, that's it.
I appreciate you giving us the information on this, and certainly we'll look forward to getting more information on the back on you work with budget job on
I might ask you a whole bunch of logs here. Can you tell me a priority?
That last one's number one priority.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I do have one question. When it comes to the earlier one, you talked about the video conferencing.
Yes.
For the translation, the language translation. The question is video is always the most expensive way compared to audio. Does audio is that not a workable solution? Because I assume it's a lower cost.
That's not a solution. And primarily right now, we do videos because the court rules allow us to do videos. And when we have attorneys that are in the courthouse communicating with prisoners in the jail, they do have the right to have to see who they're talking to.
Okay.
So that's why we do that.
I needed to ask.
Okay, sure.
And the other thing, sir, is we need the video for signing.
Okay. Great.
Excellent. Thank you.
Commissioners, those are all the officials that have asked to speak to you today.
Well, so before we shift over to Sheriff Lucas and your shop, are there any of our other elected officials that wanted to come up and talk about the decision packages or otherwise? Mr. Sessor, good morning.
Good morning. Well, first I wanted to answer a question that David had. That was last year. Our assessed value was about $35.6 billion. This year we're estimating it's about $39 billion. Last year our new construction was $354 million, and this year we're looking at right around 500 million. So we've had increases.
1% then, like 1.5% or something like that in new construction?
Yeah, it's about 50% more than it was before.
Good.
Yeah. I do want to say that, you know, that is a positive. There are the downsides to that, and that is residential increased by 50%, but we're only back to the level that was in 1992. The only place where we've seen new construction that just exceeds anything we've had before is in multifamily. So
is it multifamily?
Multifamily construction. So I guess the thing, I'm not coming here to ask for any more money. I want to remind you, last year we returned more than $632,000 to the general fund. Due to reorganization efforts, workforce planning and process improvement that led to not only better efficiencies, but gains in meeting statutory deadlines, while simultaneously increasing the quality of our work and reducing staff. What we are asking to for in this supplemental budget is actually moving funds around within our budget. In our office, we are taking a process to actually realign our budget and other items. You know, some items it shows we way overspent, other items way underspent, and it's really not been a good management tool for going forward. And so what we're trying to do in everything that we've asked the budget office for is to actually realign where we're actually spending the money so that we can further manage and say, okay, this is where the money is actually going. So that's what we're asking for.
And that's already in there, or that's in process?
The requests the assessor's making don't require budgetary action in a resolution. They can be handled through journal budgets. This is something that we can handle for him internally.
Yeah, so yeah, we're working with the budget office, but I just want to let you know that that's what we're doing. Every request we have the budget office is to better align with reality so that we can manage forward and hopefully return even more money to the general fund, which we are on target to do.
Yeah, great job.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Auditors.
Yeah. Is there anyone? Well, I'm going to do that. I mean, is there any other elected official that would like to kind of come up and talk about any of the city passages or otherwise? Seeing none. Yeah. Hearing none. Sure. Come on up. Yeah. Bring them over. Bring them up with
thank you.
And what? Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning.
Congratulations last night, by the way. Mr. Friedel.
Oh, yeah.
Your final die is not cast.
That's true. No point. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair enough.
I feel like it's my both personal and professional responsibility to bring issues and problems to the board's attention that affect my ability to provide adequate service to the people of Clark County. There are several items that were not on the approved budget that really are game breakers for us. And I would like a serious consideration for those things. I'm not going to go into great detail. I've asked my division chiefs to take the tip of the iceberg approach to their requests. You can take the current scene van off of the list. I'll find another way to deal with that.
Take what off?
The current scene van. Current scene processing evidence van. That's $190K off the table. I'll find another way to deal with that. First I'll ask Darren Rogge to talk about Region and the replacement of a rapidly failing legacy system in our office with some significant budget updates. And I'll ask Chief Mike Evans to talk about the enforcement branch, Chief Bishop to talk about jail, and Chief Nolan to talk about the civil branch.
So the major one-time request
in there is for the replacement of our legacy systems that deal with criminal records and the in-car reporting systems. This has been a long time in coming. This has been on the county strategic plan for about 10 years, and we've been seeking funding for about 10 years to address these systems, which were put into play in the 80s. The county's original IT strategic plan included this project, and the most recent one, which was 2008, identified this as the most severe gap and the highest need system based on the stakeholders that were in the, that were in the group. The sheriff and IT have made numerous requests. Up until recently, those requests were seeking funding to really do a system replacement that involved Clark County and its cities as a regional kind of system. Those requests were in the range of $4 to $5 million, with ongoing costs in the $350,000 to $500,000 range. What you saw last year in the adopted budget request, and again now, is a request that, that takes into light an opportunity that's arisen with the City of Portland, whereby they would host a regional system that would cover the entire metro area, 39 law enforcement agencies in total.
I'm sorry, I'm for interrupting. What line item are you in? Do you know what budget request out of this was?
I haven't seen what you have, so correct.
It is in the recommended budget.
The original one that we got. Perfect. Thank you. Go ahead, Derek. Sorry.
So the new approach is to partner with the City of Portland hosting this and these other agencies, sharing information, sharing in the cost. Portland is coming forward with the lion's share of the costs on the front end for bonding for this, and they're putting up about $15 million to bring this project online. We, as a subscriber, and the other 38 agencies as subscribers, would essentially assist with and share in ongoing costs to keep the system up, hardware, software, tech support, and so forth. The costs that you see in this request here really relate to us hooking into systems that are on this side of the river, within the county, doing data conversion of our existing system, standing up a system to be able to access the old data, coming to 1.6. These are items that aren't in the scope for Portland's project or for any other of the partner agencies. Other counties like Washington County are facing the same issues. Although Portland is paying the lion's share, it doesn't make it free. We still have a lot of systems to look into. So the ongoing cost for the system for us as a subscriber is about one-third of what our carrying costs would be if we were to have our own system. It's going to be in about $100,000 to $150,000 a year. The other partner agencies will pay subscriber fees as well. The total amount that's being shared across this agency pool is about $2 million per year, and there are caps on how fast that can grow in the future. And at this point, the project is really picking up pace. The vendor has been selected, the contract has been executed with Portland, the implementation work has begun, and the intergovernmental agreements between Portland and all the prospective partner agencies are well into the draft phase. And we have been, in our Washington Attorney's Office, looking at the IJs, we've been involved really in earnest for about the last year and a half, 2 years. We have yet, of course, not reached the sign on the dotted line point, but that's coming probably by the end of the year. There really are only two alternatives to taking this action. We had this window of opportunity with Portland, but again, it's going back to the prior efforts to go regionally, only Clark County, and we see real advantages to partnering with Portland here, not the least of which is about a third of the upfront costs, about a third of the carrying costs going forward. The other option would be to join the region system later, in which case we would incur latecomer fees. And all of the same costs, and probably more, involved in this request, because all of those costs would still remain. So it's not really a question of when we join this $1.5 million request. It's really any time we join, it's probably going to go up if we miss the window of coming online with the City of Portland and these other agencies. So in a nutshell, that's the region project. It replaces, again, one of our main legacy systems. The jail system is the other, and it's already got earmarked funding for that. And I understand the Finance Committee has, and we met with them last week, they have recommended this move forward. So thank you for that.
They recommended this move forward, the region?
Yes.
Commissioner, it's in the recommended budget package number 37, but it's under information services rather than the sheriff.
Got it. Okay.
And this is the one I didn't get an opportunity to speak to you with, but the finance team feels like they can find the financing for this by a closer examination of the cost allocation of Tidemark, some other things, but to assure the board that it will be paid for, I have posted $1.5 million worth of contingency as a backstop to make sure that the plan follows through. So it is in the recommended budget. It's just not under a sheriff title. It's under IT.
What about all the other jurisdictions? You rattle off some other jurisdictions on our side of the river that would be subscribers, that would be part of the City of Vancouver Battleground, all these others. Are they paying into this? Do they have upfront costs associated with this?
They will be paying into it. We really need for them to be part of the system in order for our data to be complete. And so we've offered them a 2-year opt-in. We'll pay their costs for 2 years. They start paying the third year as an incentive to get them to pony up and be a part of the system.
Three of the cities currently use our legacy system.
Who?
That'd be Vancouver, Washougal, and Kamloops. Okay. So when we make the shift over to Portland, they either have to come to the same consortium and join in as well, or find a different alternative.
Seems like a good incentive right there. If you don't want.
Yeah, but every city, the smaller cities, they're going to have costs related to upgrading their hardware to meet the minimum spec requirements, connectivity to the hub in Portland. Vancouver has secured $1 million worth of grants specifically for a regional justice system, which now is just a bigger region. So they're committing that full $1 million to project costs on this side of the river. And thankfully, because that is not included in the request that you have before you.
So they are ponying up. We always kind of want to know that, especially since Vancouver's in Portland, they're ponying up on this stuff.
Yeah, and Vancouver will have to upgrade hardware. They're standing up the training facility on this side of the river.
Okay.
They're point and responsible for the connectivity to across the river. So those are all of the scope items that they're handling within their grant. They also have hardware upgrades to do with their mobile data computers in the car. We have funding that we established in a revolving fund long ago, so we're already on a replacement cycle. So that's not in this request either. This request is really about professional services, and data conversion, and hooking interfaces together.
Does this tie into Cresta software at
all? It does.
Does it replace anything that they're using?
No. Cresta is on a different system. They have to be interfaced. And the interface is part of the cost of bringing the system up. Is just like their system interfaces with our legacy system today, and we'll need to continue to do that.
And Cresta, are they participating to the degree that you want them to in this?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're on core team on this side of the river weekly.
Great.
They have definitely a seat at the table, all of the jurisdictions here.
You mentioned Vancouver, Kamloops, Washougal, you expect Ridgefield and Battleground.
Those are decisions for those cities, but we've gotten positive indications, and they've been participating also in the participant committee that usually meets in Portland. We've met up here a couple of times, but they've been participating from early on in this.
So, if they'll become part of that system, there's a way to interface so that we don't run off and leave some smaller communities. Without communication or something.
Yeah, the smaller cities that I didn't mention, they use their own system today, so they have that option going forward, of course, or they can join this consortium.
So what kind of cost would they incur? Ridgefield, the center.
Well, subscriber costs are they're dollars per sworn position. So depending on how large of a sworn staff the agency has, will really determine their cost for subscribing to the system. So for, correct me if I get this wrong, I think it's about 7,000 or so for Ridgefield.
I think so. It ends up being about approximately $760 a year per sworn. It's per the current cost model that I'm aware of.
I just want to make sure we didn't run off and separate and not have communication. And that's our goal, to have that regional wide communication.
And they are attending the weekly meetings that we have as well. And they are attending the meetings in Portland. If anything, I think this consortium effort on the part of Portland is going to bring more agencies together than just the four that share our existing system. So us, Vancouver, Camas, and Mishibule, I think are all intending to go to this consortium. And I would not be at all surprised if some of the other cities currently aren't part of our legacy system will also join. But that's their decision.
I just got a question for Bob that I looked up and was gone. So. And I think he said that this might have been set aside.
Well, he said two things, Commissioner. One is he believed that looking at funding for Tidemark might yield some benefits. The general fund share of Tidemark may be larger than it should be, so that we could divert some of that funding to fund this. Secondly, he's reserving some of the general fund contingency as a backstop. So one way or another, this project is funded.
Great. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Chief, good morning.
Good morning. Well, good morning again. Mike Evans. I'm Chief Criminal Deputy of the Sheriff's Office, and I have command responsibility for the law enforcement operations of the Office of Sheriff. And I'd like to talk with you this morning. Commissioner Stewart, I just want to affirm that we clearly understand the purposes of Re-Adopt, having been through this process, you know, many times over the last two decades. That being said, we think it's very important and it's our responsibility not only to our staff but to the community as well to highlight a couple of things for you and to keep them basically in the light of day rather than wait every 2 years to address them. And the one item I wish to talk about this morning that's left after the sheriff took off the crime scene van is the issue of staffing. And as you know, you hear periodically from the community concerns about the number of deputy sheriffs that we have in Clark County. Every year we go through a very extensive workload analysis, and then we analyze the workload demands that the community is presenting to us and comparing it with our staffing levels. And as you know, we for decades now have been one of the lowest staffed sheriff's offices in the state of Washington. When you look at our sworn staffing level, we currently are rated next to last in terms of our staffing level. When you look at urban counties in Washington state, we lag significantly from our peer counties. As you know, in 2007, the 2007-2008 biennial budget that was adopted, the board acknowledged and recognize the staffing concerns that we have. And at that time, we were authorized to add to 8 sworn positions in 2007 and 8 sworn positions in 2008. And at that time, the board communicated to us that that would continue, as Betty Sue Morris said, in perpetuity. Well, we found out that in perpetuity was not very long because of the economic crisis. And as a result of budget reductions, we reduced 23 sworn positions rather than add 16. So we have a net loss in where we are now. I think that it's important to put into perspective what that means in terms of workload demands. Currently, we have stripped our specialized assignments. That would be detectives, traffic, canine, and all those various assignments, down to a point where we can no longer reduce them any further. That if we have to reduce any of those specialized assignment staffing levels any further, we will be forced to reduce that or eliminate that service. just because we are at that critical level. We currently beg, borrow, and steal officers from different assignments in order to meet staffing minimums on patrol. You may have heard from NAC, we did quite loudly when I temporarily transferred our outreach sergeant from that position back to patrol. They were very unhappy with us because of the relationship that they had with our outreach office. At this time, we are, with our current staffing levels and the workload demands, able, when a 911 call is received, less than 50% of the time we have staff available to respond at that time for that call. We don't believe that that's satisfactory. Calls end up in queue waiting for far too long. In order for us to have staff available for 68% of the time when a 911 call is received, we would need to add 24 deputies. And just to have the staffing available on 68% of the time. What's very interesting is it still does not allow us any time for proactive police work. And as the board is well aware, you've heard from the community that there are ongoing concerns of neighborhood problems such as drug homes and other kinds of things. Well, the statistics I just gave you does not even accommodate any time in order to have proactive patrol. In order for us to have time to proactively deal with police work and to have deputies available 68% of the time, we would need to add today 66 deputies to patrol in order to accommodate that. That gives you a little illustration as how far we have lagged behind in terms of workload demands and our staffing levels. We currently do not assign staff to areas that I see as critical. The Elder Justice Center is an example. We don't assign a deputy to that. We would really like to, but we can't. So we piecemeal that work out. In other words, we add that onto the heap of cases that other officers have. We reduced our staffing level in the Safe Streets Task Force, which is the gang task force, to one. Down from two. And so obviously we can't reduce that anymore because then it would be inefficient. We don't assign anybody, or we did not assign anybody to Auto Theft Task Force. And there's a number of other things. I think, finally, just for perspective, as you know, we've asked that the board consider reinstituting the 8-and-8 policy that was adopted back in 2007 and 2008. Obviously, we have a greater staffing need to that. We also know that we cannot effectively recruit, hire, train an outfit and get on the road much more than 80 a year. Just the amount of time and effort required, we couldn't do that. And then finally, I think just for some perspective, as I had a conversation with Sheriff Roberts of Clackamas County last week, and I really believe that for the Portland metro area, Clackamas County really is a sister county in terms of like population, like demographics, large urban core, and then a large wilderness recreational area. So we are very much the same. Population is similar, everything. We have 137 authorized sworn positions. They have 240. They have over 100 more sworn deputy positions than we do, and we are basically their mirror image. So my purpose today was to highlight statistically where we come from and why the staffing pressures are looking.
We've had this conversation before, Chief, about sworn positions versus unsworn. You guys have done amazing things as far as having non-sworn do some of the work that in other jurisdictions they use sworn personnel for. So can you give me apples to apples from Clackamas?
That is apples to apples. They have approximately 398 total employees and 240 sworn. So
as far as the work that's being done by sworn, it's similar in Clackamas as it is here?
It is apples to apples, yes. Okay. Sir. I'm very careful to make sure that I make that.
Then as far as, are there other things that you can get us? And I vividly remember the conversation we had about what's the difference between call time. Was it that I think, you know, if somebody gets there a minute late and you said something to the effect of, I'll start beating you upside the head with a bat, and we'll see how an extra minute feels.
Yeah.
I do remember that very vividly. Do we have call time statistics to tell us, you know, like how we're doing on, you know, different call types and all of that?
Yes.
Can we get some of that?
Absolutely. It's every year we do a very extensive, very thick analysis that analyzes by geographic beat, by precinct, by hour a day, and by priority. I will tell you that we do a very good job in our response times to those highest priority calls, and we focus very, very hard on it. Coincidentally, our staffing level currently, we can handle two priority one calls at any given time. We can't handle three. So, knock on wood, we've been very, very lucky in that our response times for priority one, the most serious life is in immediate danger kinds of calls, and priority two calls, we do a very good job. The priority threes, fours, and fives, where life and property isn't in immediate danger, what we call cold calls, we slip because we prioritize them differently.
I'm curious, if we add the officers to be able to, I expect that that's going to result in bringing more people in, and so the courts and the jails and that kind of staff, there's an associated kind of increase of work there. When we look at the cost per officer, both for to equip them one time, as well as the ongoing cost of what it takes for the rest of the county to be able to support them, it would be really good to know what that is so that we can incrementally move in that direction and know that we're covering the whole lot.
About 18 years ago, there was a work group that was assembled by the county that was managed through the budget office when Glenn Olson was the head of budget, and I sat on that work group, and it was a law and justice workflow work group where we worked to see if we pulled the string here, what was the effect in corrections or in the jail or in the courts, in the clerk's office. There, I believe a model was developed, but it's like a roadmap of the world, not just Clark County. It is very, very, very complicated and it's difficult to predict. But I believe that there is some work that has been done.
It would be really good for us to be able to know, at least if we increment in the direction that we want to go, to know what does that include. Say, if we have an officer, here's what we need to be able to do, to include that in the plan so we don't overwhelm another area and then have to react to that.
I'll look to see if I can find some of that old work. Toby LaFrance was a part of that work group. I think he's, you know, and so there was quite a bit of work that was done.
Thank you.
So many things have changed in the meantime with specialty courts, with sentencing guidelines. We would have to go back and construct a model to be able to do that.
Is Clackamas in about the same geographic area that we have?
Yeah, they're slightly larger because of Mount Hood and things like that.
I know that we have a very unique area in the Hazelville area.
Yeah,
the Orchards area.
If you look at the Clackamas Town Center area, it's very similar to, I would say, Hazelville.
On a deputy per thousand, I know that we're low, but on crime per officer, we're also very, very low. I don't know if we're just blessed or if that has changed or not. But I know that we have stats on that also.
Statistically, generally, counties, their crime rate per thousand is lower than municipalities. And it's largely just because of the rural natures of counties.
And I know that if we remove Highway 99, we can cut that in half again.
Well, there's some other areas as well that would dramatically impact that.
I'm curious, when it comes to Clackamas being most like us, you would be insightful to be able to know are their costs associated with the courts and the clerks and the jails and that kind of thing, so that we can at least look at that model and see if we can at least gain some insight there.
Yeah, and their funding sources are different, and they have special levies and different, you know, funding sources that contribute to offset some of those expenses. And I understand we have different funding options as well in Washington State. So there's some differences in terms of how the two states utilize. But just in terms of work, demographics and staffing levels, I think, and, you know, like it or not, we are attached to the Portland metro area. And we are all in the streets.
So, does the law allow a special levy for officers and for the staff that would be necessary to support those officers?
I've asked that question on several occasions, and the answer from our legal staff is no. But you do have 0.3% sales tax available to you that you could utilize for that purpose.
In other words, it would not be property taxes, but it was a levy on sales tax. Is a
we have a maxed our capacity on the sales tax.
You've maxed your capacity of what you can authorize without a vote. The 3/10 that's remaining require
a vote.
And I would point out the 8 and 8 that was promised in 07-08 was based upon the implementation of your last 2/10. That has not even come close to recovering yet still in terms of the amount of revenue that it brings in. So. In some ways, there's hope on the horizon if our sales tax recovers, but this whole fiasco is a demonstration of revenue volatility that we have our new fund balance policy to hopefully deal with in the future. But that was the board's last available 2/10 for self-enactment.
And that would be good to see, because it's a good reminder, we had that 2/10, it crashed, but it's recovering. So the question would be, what increases will we see and how might that affect the ability to bring in new personnel and what other personnel would be necessary, kind of the downstream impacts of that, as well as getting an updated analysis of the road fund version as well. Because we use a significant road fund diversion. Now, we don't max it, but we do use a significant road fund diversion. But there's always the question of, is that appropriate and for what purposes and what is the nexus between road fund and, is it road patrols, because the patrolling of the roadways is the nexus that people draw on, kind of really getting an update on an appropriate range might be on that too. So we can at least start developing financially ideas for how we might be able to help the situation.
For a point of interest, we recognize your request is far too little, but in the reality for, very, very difficult as well.
And I understand that, but I just thought that it's important that, like I said, we keep this issue foremost and out in the light of day. I think we have a responsibility to the community and to you as well, so that you're aware of what demands that we're facing.
No doubt. No, I appreciate that. Thanks, Chief. Mark, go ahead.
Commissioners, just a reminder that when deputies are stressed, an overloaded investigator just costs us $7.5 million, so it's paying an hour, paying that.
That's a good point to bring up. What is our overtime rate, Mike?
I can add.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Right now, I am in this biennium, which we're not even through the first year, I am currently $300,000 overspent.
Wow.
And working as hard as I can to try to reduce what our overtime expenses are.
So if we were to add a few officers, would that bring that down, or is that somewhat fixed?
Well, problematic is it takes a year to recruit and train and deploy a deputy, so we'll be through the biennium before that fix we would see.
Yeah.
And there's always overtime expenditures associated with law enforcement work. Late calls, casework, and things, and then different community events. But a large part of it goes to deployment. When we have a sick call, we have to call someone in overtime to fill that spot, and we're seeing pretty significant.
Can you give us the information, like if, it may not take effect until you got a year to get somebody up and going, but could you say, okay, well, of that $300,000, we could save $200,000 or $100,000 or $1 or whatever if we brought in X number, two or three new deputies, so that we could at least see, all right, what percentage could be paid for out of the savings from overtime?
Yeah, we could look at that. I can tell you where every dollar goes and for why. We analyze that constantly. So.
Okay. And on the officer fatigue is personally concern of mine. I think our deputies work 3/10 to 3/12.
Four 11 and 3/4 hour days, and then they have four off. We've done that a very long time. So it's actually a very efficient model for staffing, for getting a large number of deputies on duty at given times.
So my concern is that with a long day like that, and then you do overtime on top of that, that can be the risk factor.
We have a contractually built in a provision that guarantees them certain rest periods. It's called safety release time, where if they work a certain number of contiguous hours, we can't bring them back to work. We assure that they get 8 hours of break time before they come back to work so that we keep them safe.
Not very much. Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that
fatigue and adrenaline rush.
That the community realizes that the sales tax rate here, so much of that is going to C-TRAN, and when we bump it up for C-TRAN, we're not bumping it up for law enforcement. So that trade-off is one of those obvious costs that we need to keep in mind.
7/10. We have a rate of 8.4. What's our overall rate?
It depends where you live.
Yeah.
But 6.5 goes to the state.
Important to realize that the vast majority of your sales tax ain't going anywhere nearby. It's actually going to the state.
We have 1% for the county, and then there's some specialty taxes.
So C-TRAN is 0.7, right?
Yeah, and we're 1.
And we're 1. So basically, if we had 0.2, for instance, there was just a current levy here for C-TRAN that failed. For bus rapid transit and light rail, and it would be so. Really, what we're looking at, if we're talking about a sales tax bump, which one do you prefer, law enforcement or bus rapid transit?
I'll take both of those, and I'll take away from the state. So
another one. I'm more concerned with the bridge traffic that you create.
All right, enough. This isn't a C-TRAN work session, so thank you, Sheriff, for being here. Aaron, you next.
I am next. I'm Erin Nolan. I'm the Chief Civil Deputy. And so to put in perspective the information that Chief Evans provided to you, every bit of work that's done by a custody officer or a deputy sheriff on the street, or because we're actually a regional service provider, a Vancouver police officer, someone in my staff, perhaps multiple staff, are touching that work on a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year basis. The branch in which I work and the units that I oversee do the unglamorous work that actually provides the support for the structure of the wheel that rolls down the road. We don't make headlines. We don't get the glamour and the attention that other branches do, unfortunately. But we have dedicated, hardworking staff who, frankly, have been beyond capacity of their ability to do work for at least the last 6 years. Within the branch that I oversee, we actually have less people today than we had in 2007. We have functionally implemented every technological fix, creative problem-solving mechanism. We have reworked every process, every work product, every item that we touch in order to simply try to stay above water with the resources that we've been provided. There are, in response to one of your questions for Chief Evans, staffing models that were created with the 8 and 8 that meant that if we brought in 8 deputies, that also translated to accompanied number of custody officers and accompanied number of support staff. Those numbers have never actually translated to reality in my branch, yet the workload has actually continued to increase over time. When the City of Vancouver adds officers, there's no mechanism within the county structure to automatically add staff to the work impacts that creates for us in the civil branch, both in terms of record support staff, warrant support staff, and public records request staff. So what I want to talk about today is, I'll also respond to your overtime request before I get going. We actually are paying overtime on virtually every shift that we staff. Every day, every shift. That's expensive. The reason that we're doing that has everything to do with our capacity to hire and retain and bring staff on in a timely manner because of a number of different concerns. But suffice it to say, we are expending inordinate amounts on overtime despite our efforts to do creative problem solving and staffing and workflow processes. So,
can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
Based on that overtime, we'd like to ask you the same question asking the other chief. Based on the overtime that we pay out, can we add personnel to be revenue neutral there?
Absolutely. If we have sufficient staff, there's not a need to pay overtime, but for those very inordinate circumstances where something happens and we have to have staff go out at an hour that they normally wouldn't. So, as an example, our evidence logistics staff. when the enforcement side of the house does an operation like Operation Gangrene, which was highly publicized and media worthy. That work for the part of the enforcement staff took roughly 8 to 10 hours of actual time of officers on the street doing that work. That translates, though, to over 40 hours of work per staff person in our evidence logistics unit, and their work will continue on that case as long as 3 to 6 years going forward, dependent upon whatever the court process is and so on. Mr. McCauley can, I'm sure, speak very adequately to the impacts that that had on our ability to house evidence and the fact that we functionally had to build a new drug room because we've maxed our capacity with one operation. So there are a lot of things that we're not going to talk to you about today. For example, we're going into 2014. I believe that the forecasts historically were that by 2014 we would actually be occupying a new evidence logistics space, a space that was to be built because the space that we're in now was designed to be temporary. A temporary space that cost us over $500,000 to re-roof, a temporary space that has sewage leaks, water leaks, a roof collapse, and any number of sort of weather and infrastructure disasters that were unanticipated expenses because we're living in a building that doesn't meet the needs of the service that we're asked to provide. So we're not going to talk to you about a new evidence warehouse. We're not going to talk to you about the fact that we're probably going to reach capacity on that warehouse in the next 3 to 5 years. What we're going to talk to you about is an area where we're functionally being killed, and we're going to be killed with risk if we don't do something immediately about this public records issue. So what I'm here to speak to you about today is that we provide, we have two staff that work full-time, and we have an entire unit of records staff who work every day, 15 hours a day, spent satisfying requests for public records. The work that happens on the street translates to documents that people need to make insurance claims, they need it for lawsuits, they need it for civil actions, they need it for any number of purposes. And we are obligated by law to provide those documents in a timely way without adequate compensation. This staff allocation isn't the first time that this request has come forward to you. I'm aware of at least two prior similar requests that were not funded. Unfortunately, we're at the point now where we're at near collapse. We have some 576 cases that are backlogs from 2011 and 2012. Well, if you've consulted a calendar lately, we're going into 2014. We have 2 years of backlog in public records requests where fines per day can accrue up to $5 per document, sometimes per page, and those fines can go in perpetuity. This request of two staff people being allocated that would be dedicated exclusively to this function would help us clear the backlog that we currently have in 11 months. Of 1 year's worth of backlog. We have multiple years of backlog. So this stripped down request doesn't even get us technically where it is that we need to be. Each of those requests that sits on the desk and can't be satisfied because of the staffing and the amount of workload and the prioritization that goes into these requests translates to risk. We have currently paid out at least one claim for $1,500 for a timeliness issue. We have additional claims for estimated at $50,000 each, three of them that will translate to over $150,000 based on fines, penalties, and attorney fees, which are all granted under the law for our failing to provide a public record in a timely way. So multiply that times 576 cases that are sitting there. Multiple documents, multiple cases, and the small numbers are we're over $1.5 million. In money that could potentially be paid out if each of those requesters made a claim. Fortunately, they're not going to make a claim necessarily, but some are. And essentially, if you took what we have pending in claims, you could fund up to three staff in this particular function. And so we're simply saying that this is a critical need. This is a risk-based need. This is an area of the law where we don't have an option for not doing this. We don't have an option for sending it to someone else, and we have functionally exhausted all of our ability to do creative problem solving in getting this work done. This is complex, complicated work. It involves multiple requests. It involves coordination with the prosecuting attorney's office. We have to do appropriate redactions. because the other thing is, even if we had the capacity to satisfy a request within the 5-day statutory timelines or within the 30-day reasonable timeline set by the Attorney General's office, every redaction that we make or are failing to do a redaction is also a potential additional claim. So while other counties in the department are facing the same sort of issues with regard to providing public records, we're on the hook in a different way, in that a public record goes out and it's the wrong information. We, for example, provide victim address information to a suspect when we satisfy a public records request. That can have life and death consequences, never mind the fines and penalties that we might pay for getting that record to them late. So essentially, that's the impetus of our request. We're asking for 2 FTE. Ideally, we would like more than that, but we understand the reasonable nature of the budget and all of the competing needs. And so at this point, do you want to pay it out in claims, or do you want to pay it out in an investment in staffing so that we can at least functionally try to keep up?
So I don't want to do both. So as you were
excellent.
Talking,
let them know.
I guess that's my request, Chief, is that you see, we get the request and it's like, give us general fund, give us $200,000 for the additional general fund, with no, it's not how you said it, where, hey, well, we can take it out of the potential claims it comes. We have reserves that we're specifically setting aside, like our budget reserve policy. Will be at least one of the pieces of it is risk associated with claims, right? So one of the pieces is risk associated with claims. So the question that I would have is, and I don't know the answer to it, but I've asked the budget guys in finance and you to work together, is can you reasonably reasonably say X amount can be taken out of that reserve to pay for this work, because that work will save you the claims that would have come out of that fund in the first place. And so you're decreasing the risk by putting that, putting those funds toward that position or those positions, and combine that with the savings from overtime that you would see. By doing that, then it decreases the overall general fund hit. And instead of us saying, well, okay, what in the general fund would you like me to cut? Then it comes to, okay, well, what are we saving? What money are we saving by funding these positions? Because I'd love to get to that, but we got to be able to create it as far as on the budget side to be able to show it. And we need your help. Is that something that you guys could work on?
Absolutely. In bringing this request forward within my department, we did an entire capacity analysis of how much work one public records staff person can do, and quantified the capacity of that person doing work. We can attach a dollar value to their salary, to what an FTE costs, and then we can quantify risk with regard to how much potential is out there in claims. And like I said, the low estimate is over $1 million. Well, $1,053,000 is 21 FTE in my branch. So that's only 1 year of risk hanging out there. We have multiple years of risk hanging out there. So, I'm not sure how much deeper analysis you need. We know what our claims are currently, and we're talking about roughly $150,000.
I don't know. But
that's
Mark,
3 FTE.
I mean, Mark's in the back row, nodding his head along, and so Wilson can help us with this exactly. As far as quantifying risk and what we need in reserves and all of that. I'd just be curious to know what we could quantify to be able to show how we could use those reserves.
I'll send you the documents that we prepared so that you can look at that and see whether or not that satisfies the questions that you have.
I would be a little concerned with potential risk versus what the history of payout is.
Right.
And that would be a good thing that we could ask Mark to bring to us
to help us
so we have a history of comparison. And I go back to the overtime again to balance if we're paying out a lot of overtime under current budget, and we eliminate some of the overtime and add FTE.
As part of the, how would we fund
and that's
something
that you would have to bring to us to give that to work. It doesn't really work out that way.
Well, the purpose of overtime is for those unanticipated expenses. You don't want to staff any function with overtime. That's
right.
Not an efficient or effective use of the public's money.
We agree.
But at some point, when you have such a staffing deficit and you have a quantity of work that you can't manage, you have to then rely upon overtime in order to get the work done. And so none of us are happy with our overtime budget expenditures. And I can tell you that the way that that overtime and the stress that my staff feel translates is it translates into increased FMLA cases. It translates into increased sick time usage. And it translates to these people aren't faking it. These people are exhausted and simply don't come to work because they aren't able to come to work after they've worked a couple of doubles. And so, you know, none of us in the sheriff's office view overtime as overtime to fill basic functions as a desirable funding model. It's simply where we've been left given our capacity issues and the lack of appropriate staffing over time. And when we didn't get here this week, we've been here for years, and we have been constantly trying to dig ourselves as a department out of this hole that we're in with no real relief coming to us.
Well, and that's why we're asking, and we agree, we get it's part of that. It's just a matter of can we show what is that dollar amount for overtime that's being spent on just stuff that should be done, but if you have the adequate staffing, you wouldn't do it. Can we add that into the equation of how we would fund a new position or new positions? Commissioner Rodriguez.
Yes. I assume that our accounting system tracks overtime routinely for
Absolutely.
Every person, so we should already have available those records to be able to look at where, and that answers the question, where should we focus? Because that overtime translates to risk, stress, overwork, insufficient staff, all of those things, and so that would be a really good indicator that the records should simply bring those forward. Let's prioritize them or see what rises to the top.
Mark?
Just in records attributable to workers' comp, stress-related type claims, both in liability and workers' comp, is almost $400,000. So just to me,
$400,000
is roughly 10 FTE.
Yeah. And we just need to be able to we just need to bring that information together to be able to help us on the budget side, be able to get something that can help out.
I guess where we go is that we wouldn't want to be at FTEs if the overtime didn't go down.
We wouldn't have any to spend the overtime if we had adequate FTEs to do the work.
That's what we're working on.
And so overtime would only be those incidental, unanticipated incidents that, you know.
Yeah,
but that's true in any workplace or workforce.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. How are you doing?
Good morning. Thank you. Doing well. First of all, thank you, Commissioners and Sheriff, for allowing me just a few minutes to bring you up to speed on the Corrections Branch of the Sheriff's Office. In the past, I've brought data, photos, and detailed plans. And since you've seen me quite a bit this last year, I'll spare you that massive information we're continuing to collect for another day, hopefully in the near future. First and foremost, as I make these comments, I want you to remember that Clark County needs jail bed space for those people who choose to victimize our community. The men and women who work and manage the sheriff's two jail facilities understand how to provide detention services, and they're some of the very, very best in the country that I've had the opportunity to work with and see. No one should doubt our commitment to public safety by operating jails to our community's expectations, federal, state, and local standards. If we are to continue to provide adequate jail services, to keep our community safe, we need to break the cycle of the mentally ill, the homeless, and the chemically dependent from coming back to jail. We are transforming our organization and redeploying our staff and resources to start addressing the discharge planning of people who do not belong in our jails and who want to live productive lives and contribute to our community instead of consuming our limited and expensive jail resources. Our main facility is old and was expensive to build in the early 1980s. It has limitations with inmate supervision and delivery of services. We are addressing these limitations with staff, overtime, and continuing short-term and costly repairs that Mark has helped us out with, and we do appreciate that. However, we are rapidly coming to a point where serious decisions need to be made regarding the lifespan of the main facility. our partners in the public sector, the community, and the resource planning from the National Institute of Corrections could only do so much. Clark County needs to step up to the plate to get those who do not belong in jail the help they need. Getting the people out of our jail who do not belong there will help clear up the picture so we can responsibly determine the number of jail beds we're going to need to replace and build in the future. The budget package for discharge planners with mental health expertise is part of the continuing steps to address these issues. The decision not to fund this request will not stop our work, nor will it delay the rapidly approaching jail space and program decisions facing Clark County. It does reduce our potential success with our efforts and will continue to obscure the looming jail planning picture.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You said something there that contradicted with my belief, my understanding, and that is that our jail is not full.
Our jail, main jail, is full. We have beds shut down. We have beds shut down at the jail work center. And one of the ways my overtime has been addressed is moving staff down to the main facility to reduce our overtime expenditures.
So we do not have extra beds?
We have closed beds.
What's that?
They're not being used. Oh. We have 154 beds
well,
that
are
not.
Why are they closed?
You don't have the staff to operate them.
Oh, staff. The staff issue.
It's a staff
that's
issue.
Not, not a room issue.
And right. And a classification issue, but if we yeah. Can, that's a mountain of data.
You've been doing some major remodeling also. I mean,
not remodeling, but Mark has been helping us do the planning to do some work on our deferred
exactly.
Maintenance, and we have been fortunate not to be in the paper. Yes, that's correct.
Good to get on the paper.
Yes, sir. That's my job. I hope. Any other questions I can answer?
You've had, I think I've seen in the past, you've had a jail designer on staff or FTE, or you budgeted for one.
A jail discharge planner, but not a designer.
I think the commissioner's referring to the last time we took a serious poke at building a new jail, and we were looking for staff.
2007, 2008. Yes, we did a study. We still have that study.
Those staff were never added, I
no,
believe.
No, that's correct. That's a that's a major.
I would think for us to do something like that. I know that we joked, we talked about using the ball of the jail that they haven't used yet. It'd probably take some time to
we have important geo-legal issues to doing that. Extradition issues.
I mean, we can put a bond out and we can vote to build a new facility.
Oh, yeah, we could. Yes.
That's what I think would be great.
Do we have specific, I mean, is that something?
Like the public safety 310s, there's a voted 1/10 available countywide for detention centers.
For a detention center, there's a 1/10? There's no property tax one that's all sales tax?
That 1/10 that I'm aware of is sales tax.
Because sales tax is so volatile, it just seems weird that you wouldn't have a especially for a bond levy, that you wouldn't have a more stable revenue source. It seems like your bond rate would be.
You could do that on the unlimited tax deal where you would. You could do a property tax, unlimited tax levy. That you put forth to the people to vote on this kind of activity.
Okay. So we have both the property tax and the sales tax option for that can go to the people.
Correct.
So I guess it's something that we're talking about in the future. And of course, anytime you go to the people to accept another bill on the property tax, we would have to do a good selling job.
And a lot of research, a lot of planning, and then a good selling job.
Yeah.
And that's what that package is up there, is getting those who are consuming our service, who really don't need to be with us, out of there, stretching the current life of our facility, if we can, with the beds, and give us the breathing room to plan what you're discussing.
So, I'm concerned a couple of things. One, we don't have sufficient staff to open up the other beds. Is one. And then, how long will our jail last?
That is why I made the comments I did, sir, to pose that exact question to the board, is we need to study how long and how much in the way of short-term repairs we're going to invest before we make some serious decisions.
It'd be something we have to follow through in a serious manner. That we don't want to do a study and we're not be serious about funding it at the end of the study, or if the study hits a hole that doesn't mean anything, you have to start over again. So.
We are prepared. We can start as soon as you tell us to.
Looking for a blessing from the taxpayer, I guess.
I understand that. Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Good information.
Sure.
In closing, I would just like to tell you that for the last 6 years, we have purposefully withheld our budget requests, knowing the financial condition of the county. With 46 years on the job, I'm getting tired. I'm getting tired of being placated. I'm getting tired of put off. I'm being tired of being told to be a good little boy that Santa will be home next year. And I'm here to tell you that I'm not going away, that these are real pressing needs. They are public safety issues, and they're officer safety issues. On my watch, I have buried two deputies, and I do not wish to do it again. So I'm not going away. I will be in front of you. I will be nagging you. As long as I'm around.
Thanks, Sheriff. Appreciate it. Thanks for all the information from not only from you, but from the chiefs and from deputies as well. So we have some homework to do that we talked about. I'm looking at you, Bob, and you, Mark, as far as doing, you know, homework that we need to do with the Sheriff's Office on some of the, you know, overtime funding, the risk associated funding, how we might be able to package these things, as well as looking at the reasonable allocation of a historic and reasonable allocation of road fund diversion. There are a few pieces to this puzzle, some short term, some probably longer term. And then obviously the jail evaluation, the jail kind of lifespan evaluation, and what that might mean. So that's something that you guys can work with the Sheriff's Office and then bring some ideas back to the board, maybe in board time, about what you're finding out and before we get to a budget hearing?
This particular budget hearing? Not all of those things, but we certainly get to the most immediate ones.
There may be some that are more have more short-term potential than others, but we don't know, so we need help.
I think from what I heard, I think we need to focus on the positions for the disclosure staff and perhaps the discharge planners. Those seem to be the most immediate things that have the best potential.
I don't know. I mean, talk to and involve Mark Wilson in this as well. I mean, I don't know if those are the ones that have the most potential for short term. That's something you guys,
right?
You know, you guys are all great at this stuff, so you know, we trust you to come up with those ideas and bring them back to us.
We will do that.
On our side, it looks back and tell us that as we go into the next legislative session, we need to go back and ask for that again in this public request. We need some relief from that. So the legislature didn't do that, and that's what Aaron shared with us, the number of FTEs it takes and dollars it takes to do that, and the penalty down the line when that doesn't get done is astronomical. That's just one little part of it, but I want to reassure you, Aaron, that that was one of our requests last year, and I think it
it's on the, this year's
happened. Yeah. It almost happened at the legislature, and we fell apart. But it needs to be our request, our lobbyists, as we move forward.
I'm curious also if we ended up opening up that some of those beds that are closed, there would need to be a certain amount of staff to be able to cover that. And if we had more deputies out there on the street to bring more people in, we need to be able to cover this. So what we need to be able to do is have a package. We need to know what would it cost to really support our law enforcement and what do you call the courts and all the rest of that to support that. That really needs to be a package that's pretty well guessed, so we know about this. How much is that going to cost one time? How much is that going to cost per year? Because that would help us to know what do we need to do.
Commissioner, that package was developed in the 07-08 budget that the sheriff has referred to when the board was considering the 2/10 additional sales tax. So we have a basis to start from, to go back and look, because I know that the sheriff didn't benefit at all from the 2/10 ultimately when it crashed, and I believe that the rest of law and justice suffered the same fate in terms of the positions that were planned under that 2/10. I guess initially the hope was that if the recovery came and everything was wonderful on that too. The problem with the 2/10 is it was enacted right at the boom. So all of the forecasts off of what that 2/10 would pay for were from the top of the mountain out. And I think we need to revisit. There are several, actually, law and justice dedicated tenths of sales tax. I think we need to revisit some of the forecasts for those things and make sure that when we do start to recover, that the money gets spent in the appropriate place on the appropriate things.
I agree. And this is not a C-TRAN meeting, but I can tell you that law enforcement is the primary, the most fundamental service that indispensable. We have to do it. And if we're going to talk about sales tax, I would love to be able to see, what do we need to do to trade C-TRAN sales tax for law enforcement sales tax? I'd like to be able to explore that.
Separate tax authority.
I know it does. I'm not talking about this being the jurisdiction, but I'm talking about for a big picture, us collaborating with, as a community, in a big picture, what's more important here? Because the ridership for C-TRAN has been about 6% since 1995, and our budget has increased by about 5 times during that time for the same service. I just love to be able to see us change our priorities so that we can get officers on the street, we can get the kind of staff here to be able to cover that, and it's just a smart priority. So that's just a bigger picture.
How much of the 1% that we get is voter approved? Of our 1% that goes to sales tax that goes to the county, how much of it is voter approved?
None of the 1%. There are other, like the mental health sales tax.
Got it. So none of our 1% is voter approved. All of the 7/10 from C-TRAN is voter approved. So the priority from the voters that they already gave us was that 7/10 is going to C-TRAN. So unless you want to go against the will of the voters, then you wouldn't be trying to take money away from that. So
no, if a question goes back to the voters and say, would you rather have law enforcement instead? So it's going back to the voters is the idea.
You can't go back to the voters and take money away from C-TRAN and then give it to law enforcement. It's not legal.
No, I'm not suggesting that you do it. I'm saying that basically there's a bigger picture that needs to happen in this whole collaboration and choices that need to be brought forward on a bigger picture. This is just simply a looking at the big picture, knowing that there's different jurisdictions and there's different priorities that we as a community need to make, so that when we talk about sales tax increases for bus rapid transit, light rail, and that kind of stuff, we're giving up the law enforcement because that's sales tax. What are you going to use it for?
There's more than just that jurisdiction. I get it. You got me in your bonnet, man. That's cool. Let it buzz. All right. As far as next steps?
The next steps, Commissioner, is first of all, I'd like to get your consensus that this is the staff report you want me to publish for the hearing, with the knowledge that you can make any changes you want at the hearing. Nothing is off the table.
Yeah.
Pardon? Yeah. No, we can't publish it as a draft, Commissioner. When we announce the public hearing, we have to this is what we propose to do at the public hearing, and then any changes can only happen at the public hearing.
And do you have to publish the levies that you're anticipating?
I'll have to check on that. I don't think we do.
We have budget request by November 30th. We have to submit a budget request to the assessor's office indicating how much people request to bridge levy. So we're calling your attention on how you vote. But you actually need to vote on those levies the same day as the public hearing. You'll get to
I know.
Correct.
I know we vote at that, but do we have to publish something? I mean, we're voting at all on that date. Do we have to publish something?
I don't believe we have to publish the proposed or the options, but I'll double check. I'll make sure.
Just double check. Yeah. Perfect. Anything else?
I said, you know, without enacting the levy that we talked about for law enforcement, we have done the task where we dedicated a portion of, like, the 1% we did at
public health.
Public health.
Right.
Exactly. We can do that without having to go to vote at
Sure. Okay. All right. Perfect. Anything else you can do to the order? All right. Thanks. Thanks for all of you folks. Appreciate it. You gotta be in the bond party. You gotta be in your bond party. Thank you for public health party. I gotta be in my bond party.
Yep.